Welcome to season four of The Culture of Kindness. My name is Nahala Summers and I am your host. A culture of kindness is based on the idea that by bringing kindness into leadership, we reduce stress, anxiety, make happier workplaces, and in turn, improve the bottom line for any organization or institution. It is a book, leadership program, accreditation, and of course, this wonderful podcast. Kindness has been my life's work since I founded the social movement for kindness back in 2012 called Sunshine People. And it has kept me interested on what people have to say on the complexities of kindness ever since. The guest lineup is exceptional, from politicians to social media influencers, best-selling authors to BBC presenters, an eclectic mix of people who all have completely different views on kindness, how we get it, and where the world is currently at. If you enjoy this episode, then please do show your support for kindness by subscribing to the podcast, leave a five-star review, or simply invest in the book, aptly named A Culture of Kindness, available on Amazon. Thanks so much. I hope you enjoy. I'm very keen to talk about the social anxiety has it been growing? Has it been growing in society, this kind of social anxiety, or has it always been as big as it is? We're just talking about it more now.
It's a really interesting question. And it's actually surprisingly quite difficult to answer, because when you look at historical comparisons, it is very difficult because you're quite often using different instruments over time to measure social anxiety. And there's often different reporting rates. People will talk about things and have a vocabulary for talking about experiences at one time that simply didn't exist in the past. So I don't want to make a big conclusion about the situation now being completely unlike or qualitatively different to how things used to be through the course of history. But having said that, there is research evidence where people have been doing surveys regularly using the same instruments or the same types of reporting methodologies, which suggests that actually things have gotten more difficult. And, you know, especially when I talk about the mental health of children and young people, it is, of course, placed to be Children's Mental Health Week this particular week. And when you look at what's been happening for children and young people in relation to mental health, there is evidence that things have got worse, that there is a higher level of anxiety now than there was in the past. And that really raises quite big concerns, doesn't it? Of course, the first question is, well, where is it coming from? Like, what's happening? What's happening in our society that's producing that? I think the answer to that question is quite multifaceted. There isn't one thing that you can point to. I think people talk about our communities, they talk about social media impacts, they talk about our value systems expressed in the media. You know, all of those different things might be combining to bring about changes in how people feel, but there's no doubt about it. There is a significant proportion of young people who are extremely anxious. And that's a challenge that we all have to work on together. We have to work that out together.
Mm. Do you think that family and the dissolve of the family unit, as was once known, has made an impact on social anxiety?
That is an interesting hypothesis, right? Because you can certainly see when there are family breakups, there is an emotional cost associated with what happens, because relationships are changing, and sometimes there's some very significant life disruption that's going hand in hand with that. And there's no doubt about it at the individual level. Of course, you'll be able to point to family experiences and say, well, that's got to be playing a role. As an explanation for what's happening over the course of history, though, I'm not so sure about that, because if anything, what we're recognizing now is that it's not simply a matter of household composition. being the decisive factor in whether someone's well-being is good or not, is not the case that we can point to a certain constellation of family life and say, well, that's good versus that's bad. As always, it comes down to relationships, and it comes down to the quality of those relationships. And you could have a family situation where, yes, maybe there is a breakup, and yes, there is an emotional cost to that because there's big change, but actually it's associated with really positive benefits for well-being for all of those concerned, because the relationships actually that are involved there have been really supported, and there's actually much less conflict than there used to be. You know, that could happen as well. So I don't think the situation here is one where we can say, because society has moved from having this proportion of what you might call, in quotes, intact families versus this proportion of intact families, this is going to lead to a change in levels of well-being. It just isn't as simple as that. And the reason it's not simple is because human beings are, you know, quite complex creatures. We have complicated emotional lives that depend on the relationships that we have with each other. And that's got to be more important than just a kind of a superficial look at, well, who is in the house? Who do you live with?
Yeah.
Does that make sense now?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Do you think that we, you know, if as a society, because we are changing, we're diversifying our relationships. You know, I've got friends that have not the usual, the historical family unit, but they've communicated well, everybody lives in harmony, you know, they talk about the challenges, and they've built a new type of family unit that's very successful because they're emotionally intelligent enough to be able to do that. Do you think that that's a key for our future in terms of focusing on improving as humans our emotional intelligence over anything else? Do you think that will support our the current social anxieties that are happening?
Well, I think that's right. I mean, it's quite difficult to be really precise about what we mean regarding emotional intelligence. That's quite a contentious issue, right? And I think it's not a monolithic thing where you say either you're high or you're low in emotional intelligence. It's actually much more multidimensional than that. And actually, you know what, it goes back to what we were talking about school life and how we promote well-being and health in schools, because things like resolving conflicts with our peers, managing our own emotional states, like how we manage ourselves when we're feeling high level of negative emotion, what we do internally and in our behavior when we're feeling anxious, for example, all of those are skills that impact on how we develop as human beings and how we relate to each other. And I think we need to be paying attention to that skill set. I think these are real competencies that emerge in the context of our relationships. And this isn't a simple matter of just saying, okay, well, we need a program of how to teach children to be more emotionally intelligent, and we'll get some expert people into schools to deliver those lessons. I don't think it's as simple as that. It's not just a series of lesson plans as to how to teach people to solve conflicts or to be more empathetic. There is great teaching work that can be done to support those skills, but more than anything, it depends on the quality of the environments that we're in, right? So when you're talking about the example just before around a family which has built this really supportive set of relationships, I think that's the environment that becomes so important for the children growing up in that environment to actually learn those skills themselves. So as ever, it's a kind of a combination of things that we actually teach directly and explicitly in, let's say, class lessons, combined with the experiences that we have in everyday life. It goes back to what we were just talking about at the very beginning, those little social encounters that we have with the people in our lives. It might be that the way we talk with people as we're going in and out of a classroom might be playing a huge role over and above the content of what's in that particular class lesson.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting. I've got this very simplistic view of it, not being a core academic like yourself, and where I think, well, if we start with the education, and then when they go into adult, they're able to, and families, you know, divide and change, and we're going to accept that that is family life, right? That we're changing our family dynamics. And but when they do that very successfully in terms of the communication, that they still respect each other and show respect. They have that empathy and gratitude for the relationship that they had and move into. And so that's in my mind, I think, well, it's just very simple. You just educate and then it just rolls on up, you know, into the which I know it's not as simple as that, but I feel like it's, you know, it's
it
the start.
Be, right?
It
should be simple like that. I don't know. I mean, I often get asked that question about what gets in the way, what's the problem? Why is it that we can't just allow this to grow and flourish, this culture of kindness, if you like? What stops that from happening? And I think it comes back down to that question of the conversations we have about what really matters. And that's why, you know, go back to what we were saying earlier about the COVID-19 context, this current pandemic. We are asking ourselves what really matters. And that's true in the school system. It's true in a workplace. It's true in every aspect of society. And I think those conversations need to happen, because otherwise what you end up with is a situation where you could have an individual who has developed some great skills in terms of empathy and sort of peaceful and supportive approaches to managing conflict situations, managing their own emotions, being more empathetic to other people. But if they find themselves in an environment which is completely oppressive, which is like the opposite of that sort of a kind environment, where it feels like it's sort of dog eat dog and never mind about relationships, because really it's just about competing and outsmarting the other person and taking a very instrumental orientation where it's all about dominance rather than social connection, then it's very, very easy, unfortunately, for the kindness to get squashed. And that's why I think there's a responsibility for all of us at the moment to think about our own lives, and not simply wait for other people to kind of show the way. I think all of us need to be thinking about our lives at work, in community settings, and to be looking at, actually, what do we really want? Have we got it right? Are we thinking in the right way? Are we working from first principles and really thinking about how we achieve the things we all collectively want? And I think we need to have those conversations, which is why, actually, it's been so pleasing taking the work forward on kindness to see that people from so many different walks of life have really connected with it. It's been one of the things I really discovered. You can tell that I got into thinking about kindness in the school context, because that's where I've been doing most of my research, looking at children's social and emotional development. And I started thinking about, you know, what makes a school environment kind. But as I began to talk to people, I quickly realized people were asking similar questions about business workplaces, about a healthcare setting, about social work and social care. And I found that really fascinating. It does seem to resonate, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's... you know, I've been in this, in the kindness world for... 8 years now, really, and kind of start. I call myself the accidental researcher of kindness. I was never my intention, and I'm certainly not an academic such as yourself. But what I found was that it's been growing, you know. And I'd love to think that my conversation started it, but I absolutely know that that's not the case. But what I do know is that people are starting to cry out because they recognize, even before COVID, but it really kind of ramped up, that human connection is more important than money. And that's, I think, you know, if we were to really, I know everything is much more complex than that, but I think everyone's starting to recognize that those human connections that they have just hold so much value.
I love that. And I love the idea of the accidental researcher into kindness. And you know what? The fact that that's really does seem to be growing, that it really is spreading, I think is incredibly encouraging, because it tells us something really important. This isn't about some sort of overwhelming set of findings about actually if you're kinder, then X, Y, and Z is going to happen. It's actually starting from a more intuitive point about actually what makes a difference to our quality of life, what makes a difference to our feelings of well-being. And I think kindness is something that people really connect with in a very, very intuitive way. There's something incredibly simple and intuitive about having a conversation about kindness. And we found that even with teenagers, when we talked to teenagers about kindness, I was actually really surprised to find that far from thinking that this is a really sort of, fluffy subject that doesn't have any substance to it, people immediately connected. They really zeroed in on it because they knew what it feels like when someone's kind to them. Everybody you talk to, doesn't matter who it is, they know what it feels like when someone's being kind to them. And they also know what it feels like when someone's unkind to them, right? Yeah. It's a very intuitive thing. So I think, in a way, we're all sort of those accidental researchers into kindness. Once we start thinking about it, it's very easy for it to come to mind as being really hugely relevant.
Yes.
To how we're feeling and what our lives are like.
Yeah, it sat within, you know, within workplaces, it sat within these kind of core values of gratitude, empathy, integrity, trust, time, courage, and connection. And what I have found personally is that kindness is much more complex than buying somebody a cup of coffee in a queue, but it has the power to make global and societal change. Because when we take on all of those values that sit under the umbrella of kindness, we can start to see political reform. We can start to not be shouting at each other across a room to make political change. Mm-hmm. We can start to mend broken relationships that you might have personally with people, but also within workplaces and within family. And you know, when you start to think of that bigger picture, for me, you start to realize that it's incredibly powerful. But you have the Sussex kindness research that's very specific, kind of sat underneath the Crest Lab. Is that correct?
Oh, well, actually, they're kind of related to each other, but it's not like one is underneath the other. Sussex Kindness Research is actually quite a lot bigger because it involves people from across multiple disciplines. So whereas Crest Lab is just a research that I'm doing in the area of developmental psychology, Sussex Kindness Research is an interdisciplinary network which we're looking to build, and hoping to expand it and bring in even more people externally as well as within the university from all different disciplines. And, you know, I've already talked about people being interested in kindness on an intuitive level, but now there's a huge amount of research which is also focused on looking at different topics in different disciplines through the lens of kindness. And so we have people from anthropology, from the business school, from the medical school, from education, from social work. And I think there's something really powerful about the fact that people are looking at topics like, actually, you're talking about the global picture. We've got people looking at topics around international aid and international relations through the lens of kindness and really trying to understand where does kindness fit in, what is the nature of kindness at a global level in comparison with sort of an individual act of kindness, and what are the impacts on people and communities. So that's really exciting. And there is a huge amount of interest in kindness now in comparison with the past. It really is growing as a field.
Yeah, for sure. When you talk about that, it takes me. So I've had a student this year doing a film about kindness, a short film that is kind of promoting Sunshine People. We always try and do a film every year. But his film was very much about, and he did it in the middle of COVID, and he interviewed, I think, three ladies, two refugees, and interviewed them over Zoom and they talked about the kindness that they had received.
Right. But
he was talking about when he was doing this kind of research and he started to talk to different people, what he found was that there was such a mixed reaction about it. And even people who were maybe an immigrant to the UK, first immigrant, so had literally come, but then would be very negative about refugees. And there was a real kind of the communication and, you know, he really kind of opened up a world to himself where actually nothing is easy. You know, when you start to look at things around the kindness lens, you go into this whole dark hole, like this whole world of information and research, right, and opinions and what people feel and how they've got there and why they feel like that.
That's so true. And you know what I was saying earlier, that kindness is simple and intuitive, and I think that is true. I think there is a simple intuitive resonance there, and yet at the same time what you just said is something that I've seen as well. It's incredibly complicated. So here we've got something which manages to be simple, intuitive, and incredibly complex and multidimensional at the same time. So I think you're absolutely right. And I, you know, to me, there's a lot of work for us to do to really understand the nature of kindness and precisely those things that we were talking about before. You know, how other things sometimes get in the way of it. How we balance up the desire for greater kindness in our lives, which I think we all share, with the kind of demands that there are in with regard to, I don't know, getting ahead and achieving success in other domains. Those kinds of things are really complex, and especially when you look at it at multiple levels and you realize that you're dealing with some really entrenched systemic inequalities, you're dealing with some institutional biases potentially, which have a long history. You're dealing with global dynamics where these aren't sort of simple choices. You're having to weigh up many different factors in order to work out what's best, and you realize the answer to what seems like a simple question, what's the kindest thing to do, is anything but, right? Sometimes the hardest thing. So is it kind for this person or that person? Is it kind in the short term or in the long term? Is the kindness towards one group of people going to disadvantage another group of people, and so on? And the list just goes on and on. So there's a lot of work for us to do there. But I do think that there is a renewed interest in paying attention to these dynamics because we recognize that fundamentally there is a simple truth here, which is that kindness is like a glue which connects human beings together. And that's overwhelmingly important for our well-being.
Yes. Now, there's a quote for if we ever needed one. So, I mean, you just do research all the time. You've got research papers everywhere. But I'm interested in what came about on the adolescence conceptualization of kindness and its links with well-being, a focus group study. Was there any particular things that kind of came out from that that was of particular interest, or things that really kind of stood out to you from that?
Okay, so I'm glad you picked up that paper. So this was a paper that was led by one of my PhD students, a wonderful PhD student, Jess Cotney, who did her PhD with me, and she was very focused on understanding and hearing young people's voices with respect to kindness. And like I said, young people really, really connected very well. They were very open in talking about kindness, what it was and what it meant to them. And I suppose one of the things about it that came through was that kindness wasn't just about in at least in young people's voices, wasn't just about helping other people. It's not simply about one person seeing someone else in need and giving them some help. It could take many, many different forms. Young people talked about forgiveness and honesty, even gratitude, as being a kind of a form of kindness. And what was interesting about it is that the common thread linking all of those things together was a sense of being focused on the other, focused on care for the others. So there's a motivational dimension to this. This isn't just about doing an act of kindness. It's about what's motivating it. What's the value system? What are the goals which are giving rise to that? And in the case of a kindness which young people experience as being authentic, it's fundamentally about transcending yourself, right? It's stepping out of yourself and genuinely showing care towards others. And, you know, it's one of those great paradoxes or ironies that you find in psychology sometimes. It's actually when you do that, when you let go of yourself and you transcend yourself and you reach out to other people and you're motivated by care for others, you end up with actually better outcomes for yourself.
Yeah.
You end up with better well-being for yourself. And young people talked about that as well. They talked about the benefits of kindness, not just for the person receiving it, but for the person who's actually giving it, the person who's actually being a support to other people. So I think that's really interesting, you know, that young people were really sensitive to that dynamic and recognize the complexity of it. And they talked about the situational constraints, the things that would make a difference to whether someone can be, actually have the resources to be kind in a given situation or not. They were really attentive to all of those things. But for me, the biggest standout for it from that from all of those conversations was that key concept of authenticity. You know, they didn't see kindness as being simply a set of behaviors. This isn't a case where you can say, go and do these acts of kindness and that will make the environment a kinder one. It's something much more fundamental to do with how we're feeling inside and where we're paying attention, you know, giving that awareness of other people real prominence in our lives. And of course, there is, I mean, one final point, though, this is probably another kind of a podcast in itself. There is also the issue of turning that inside to ourselves and showing kindness to ourselves as well, which is a related matter. But to me, that is very, very different from a kind of a ulterior motive type of kindness where we do kind things to other people just to feel good ourselves. I think that's a very different kind of a setup. For me, the biggest message about the authenticity was actually you do have to transcend yourself.
Yes.
And to me, that's a really significant step. And the fact that young people are voicing it, you know, during their teenage years makes me feel like there's something very fundamentally human about that.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I'm booking you in for that next podcast about kindness to self, because it's something that comes up. And again, you go into this complexity, don't you? So when you are kind to somebody, you know, you're doing something for somebody else, it's very much about the other person.
Yeah.
But also you have to be able to divide that up and then go, and now actually I need to be kinder to myself. I need to forgive myself for that mistake. I need to, you know, not worry because I didn't do, you know, eight yeah. hours work today and I overslept and, you know, all these things where we beat ourselves up. But I'm feeling like that, you know, and it goes on even more than that, but I'm going to save that for another episode and bug you again.
You know, it would be fascinating to talk with you about that as well. The one thing I would say about it is that the self-directed kindness isn't simply a matter of being like a kind of a selfish or egotistical or narcissistic or anything like that. It's quite the opposite.
Yeah.
I think that when we're talking about sort of kindness to self, again, in one of those slightly paradoxical, ironic ways, actually what we're really talking about is connection with other people, because what we're doing is we're recognizing our common humanity. We're recognizing that we're connected with every other person. And just as much as we transcend ourselves and show care to others, that's the same thing that we need to be able to give to ourselves as well. And that actually is not just about focusing only inwards. It's actually saying we're all in this as a common human bond.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like I could have a couple more hours and it still probably wouldn't be long enough to have a conversation with you. But as we've already done a double episode of the podcast, I probably should draw it to a close. But I always ask as the final question, what does a culture of kindness mean to you?
Well, a culture of kindness, I think, is one where we really notice each other, where you really acknowledge, understand, and take the time to notice each other. And that is not just about kind of superficial details, but it's going back to what I was saying before about the common humanity. It's recognizing that we're there together as human beings, and that connection becomes stronger as a result of that. So yeah, for me, the culture of kindness is just recognizing each other as human beings, that, you know, we're all dealing with different circumstances. We've got lots of different issues. There are huge inequalities in life. There's no getting around that. And there are important and urgent actions that we need to take around some of those societal issues. But fundamentally, we're human beings and we need to notice each other.
Robin, thank you. What an ending. Thank you so much. It's been so insightful. And I look forward to already having you on as a guest again.
And, such a pleasure. It's so lovely to chat with you, Mother.
Thanks, Robin. Thank you so much for listening. If you have loved this episode, please do share it with others. Pop on and give a lovely review, but mostly take forwards into your life something that can change someone else's. We are looking for the elusive happiness, and kindness is the action that can get us there.